Recently, Governor Nathan Deal and Representative Calvin Smyre of Columbus announced that the state of Georgia has selected Henry County-based sculptor Andy Davis to create the statue of Martin Luther King Jr. that will stand on the Georgia State Capitol grounds. Andy Davis is with us here in the studio. Welcome.
Thank you.
Oh, it is so good to have you here. Now, the King Estate issued a statement saying, "We believe the sculpture should capture the essence of Dr. King's legacy as a civil rights leader, a Nobel Peace Prize winner, a husband, father, and a Georgian." These are profound demands worthy of the subject, but how did you feel when you heard that statement?
Well, I was naturally very excited about that. It's a tremendous honor, and but it's also a jovial burden, too, because just like the King Estate said, this is a person that gave his life for what he believed in, and there's not too many people among us that have done that voluntarily, but there's a lot among us that have. And he has a national holiday. He's world known. He's probably one of the most recognized humans in human history. And to be able to have the nod from the King family and the governor and the state to choose me to do this is quite an honor that that I'm going to put my life into make sure that everybody's proud.
Oh, you must still be 10 feet off the ground, even though I should tell the audience he's sitting down at the moment. But you must.
But I'm floating. You can't see below the table.
How can you not to be chosen for such an honor? And I wondered, Andy, if you were surprised on a certain level that you're white and you were chosen.
Am I white?
I think you're white.
Oh, gosh. Really, I didn't think about it that much. I really, really didn't, Lois. Certainly it came into mind, but art is colorblind. I mean, look at Ray Charles. He was black, grew up in the South, horribly segregated, very talented. He had his dreams, and he believed in those dreams. And, you know, being that he was blind, music transcends everything, and that's his art. And I'm the same way. Art is not black, it's not white, it's not Chinese, it's not anything. It is what it is. It's what you bring to it. Now, as a black person may look at a piece of art, they bring themselves to it. As somebody, a white or any other culture, they bring their culture and their beliefs to the art. They may be different, but the art never changes. It stays the same. And that's part of the beauty of it.
Indeed. We certainly celebrate the universality of the arts. I've just been so struck by a recent comment from the Alliance Theater playwright in residence, Pearl Clegg, who said, we need science and math to understand the world. We need art to understand ourselves.
That's a very good comment. And you know, when we look at the history, written history, verbal history, art and sciences are always the most important things. They're the ones that last. It's not the politicians. It's not the coliseums. It's not the buildings. It's not sports. It's art and science.
The creative endeavors.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's the thing that's going to last. We can't live in a world without those.
Well, we're talking with a very creative artist, Andy Davis, recently chosen to be the sculptor for the monument of, I guess I should say, the statue of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., which will go on the grounds of the Georgia State Capitol. You're listening to City Lights on WABE Atlanta.
Paint your palette blue and gray. Look out on a summer's day with eyes that know the darkness in my soul. Shadows on the hills. sketch the trees and the daffodils, catch the breeze and the winter chills in colors on the snowy linen land. Now I understand what you tried to say to me, how you suffered for your sanity, and how you tried to set them free. They would not listen, they did not know how. Perhaps they'll listen now.
Listening to City Lights on WABE, I'm Lois Reitzes here with sculptor Andy Davis. I would love for you to talk about what is described as the earliest achievement, or I should say the earliest flowering of artistic achievement that was actually on the ceiling of your childhood bedroom.
Oh, I'm so busted now. I didn't think you were going to bring that up. No, that's great. My brother, Alan, was sick one day, and we were all, and he was at home, and I remember trying to entertain him of some sorts, and I don't think he stuck around for the end result, but what I had done was I had taken one of those pop guns, you know, that has the cork in the end of it that we, of course, could never play with today, and I filled it with, I took a kit from the Boy Scouts. My mother was a den mother, Diane is her name. And I took acrylic paints and super glue. Not super glue, but airplane glue. You know, that's a good mixture, right? And I filled the barrel with some paint and glue and fired it at the ceiling. And it made this spectacular splash that I just absolutely loved. And the cool thing about it was is that it left, because of the glue that was in there, it left this trail. So then I would put other paints in there and mix this up, and I'm at this thing going about 2 or 3 hours, and I think by that time my brother had already escaped the house because he knew the incoming barrage of my mother and father. And after that period of time, it was like a just cobweb of colors. It was spectacular.
Well, Jackson Pollock would have approved.
He would have totally approved. And so that was my parents came in and I call it funnily, it was titled "My God, Son, What Have You Done?" Now they said I didn't get in trouble for it, but I seem to remember something a little bit different. But they did encourage both my brother and I to be creative. My mother is an artist, very talented artist. My dad wrote music and sang and seemed to be creative as well. And I was allowed to paint on my walls and ceiling. And it was just a great opportunity to take a paintbrush or a pen or magic marker and draw cartoon characters on my wall at the house.
So starting with that kind of creativity and encouragement from your parents.
And I didn't get paid for that commission, by the way.
Listen, part of the requirement, you've got to be a starving artist. I'm sure your parents didn't starve you, but here you are having created some world-renowned works and sculptures, and soon to create the monument to Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. here in the grounds of the Georgia State Capitol. You are a self-taught artist,
yes,
I understand. Now, bronze sculpture, I would think, is not something you could pick up easily on your own. How did you acquire the skills?
Well, I mean this very, very humbly. We're all born with specific talents. And those talents range from levels of how much talent in a particular area or category that you were born with or that's discovered within you. Mine happened to be visual and be able to take, to organize shapes into faces. And I look at the ovals, the triangles, the circles, and can categorize those in my mind in an easier way than I think a lot of people can. Whereas some people might be mathematicians or they're musically inclined or whatever that may be. So when I was young, growing up, I just never, I always remember a time where I would look at somebody's blouse or their shirt or their glasses or a tree or a car, and I would go back and I would draw what I would take these snapshots in my mind. Not that I would have a photographic memory, but I always knew that I could draw. I always knew I could paint. I always knew that I could sculpt. It's just something that was, it was never not there, I suppose, the best thing to do, to say. So when I started sculpting in a more serious level, I just kind of got it. And then naturally through the years and getting the commissions, I developed more technique and more style and added on top of the talent that I was born with.
Well, people, you know, may not quite understand how entailed that would be. There's chiseling.
Yes, ma'am.
And there's bronze,
yes,
which is a mold, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe after we take a break, you can talk about that process.
I'd be happy to.
Here with Andy Davis, the sculptor who has been chosen by Governor Deal to create the monument to Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. that will be on the grounds of the Georgia Capitol. You're listening to City Lights.
And then you say hello, and I can hardly speak. My heart is beating so, and anyone can tell. You think you know me well, but you don't know me.
No, you don't know.
No, you don't know the one who dreams of you at night and longs to kiss your lips and longs to hold you tight. Oh, I'm just a friend. That's all I've ever been. 'Cause you don't know me.
No, you don't know me.
For I never knew the art of making love, though my heart aches with love for you. Afraid and shy, I let my chance go by, a chance that you might love me too.
Love me too.
You give your hand to me, then you say goodbye. I watch you walk away beside the lucky guy. Oh, to never, never know the one who loves you so. Well, you don't know me.
Listening to the inimitable Ray Charles, and very appropriate topic because my guest, sculptor Andy Davis, created the monument to Ray Charles that is in Albany, Georgia. You were long a fan. How did you feel approaching that one?
We were talking off the air, and I actually had read the book, Brother Ray. And I grew up learning and loving all types of music, Louis Prima and just all the greats. And after I read the book, Brother Ray, I decided that this is a project. You know, Ray Charles is somebody that I admired, and decided that I wanted to create a sculpture of him in his hometown of Albany. And so it wasn't like, you know, I got the big call type thing. This was a project that I actually originated to the people of Albany, and met with the people, the movers and shakers down there, and we got the funding for it, which was $2.9 million. It's public information. So, excuse me. And so this was about a two-year-long process, but I wanted to create this for Ray. Like all people like him, of all different talents and skills, where they put their entire life into their dream instead of just following a dream, they go after it, they try to conquer it. And so it was a big process there, and it took about 2 years. And then we got the funding put together and designed the four acre property, which would be called the Ray Charles Plaza. And I began to create him in clay. But the one thing that I remember about that is that I have to picture everything in my mind. I don't know what other artists do. It really doesn't matter. But for me, I have to be able to picture the image in the Chavant clay that I use. And I just could not see anything of Ray in clay, and it actually really scared me for about 2 months. It didn't scare me, it concerned me. I knew it would come, so I started creating the piano first. And what was neat about that is that the piano also inspired Ray first, the music then that. And so for about 2 months I was sculpting this beautiful piano out of clay. And then one night at about 11:30 I called my wife Cherry and I said, I got it. And it just came to me, and it just happened to be like 11:30 at night. So I got me a bottle of Merlot and started creating the bust of Ray Charles. And I was, he came out of the clay after only about 5 or 6 hours. Oh. I was extremely artistically manic. And I just, my heart just exploded with joy. And I couldn't stop. I didn't want to stop. And
I love that the piano was, you know, his essence mm-hmm. was what ultimately mm-hmm. propelled you
yeah.
to come up with the bust.
Absolutely.
You created. Well, now, the monument to Dr. King
yes,
is
ma'am.
Going to be bronze?
Yes, ma'am, that's correct. 8 feet tall.
Whoa.
From head to toe.
How many people does that require to execute?
A gazillion.
It takes
yeah,
a village
yeah,
to create it,
yeah,
a bronze
yeah, and
sculpture.
A hollow tree. The original process is I will have a body model that is of Dr. King's size. He was about 5'7" in real life and weighed about 145 to 150 pounds. He wasn't a big fella. And I'll use a body model, I'll still use all of his measurements to scale. And so I will do that. I'll have a custom-made suit for my subject, and we'll build a skeleton of Dr. King, but we'll scale it up to 8 feet tall, or 9 feet tall, actually, because in the process, things shrink, and I'll get to that in a little bit. Then I start putting the foam over the iron skeleton that the foundry will create for me, and then inches and inches of clay are laid over the top of that, and then I start sculpting. And then from that point, once I finish the sculpture, the foundry will come to my studio and set up shop there for several days, and they'll make a rubber mold and plaster mold of my original. They'll demold that, which horrifyingly destroys my clay original when they demold it. But it's a sacrifice that artists make. What we're doing, what we're creating in the studio is more valuable than anything because it's our original artwork, but we also know it's going to be destroyed. But it comes back again stronger and better, and it'll last eons of lifetime. Mm. It's what will stand. So then they'll use that rubber mold to make a wax positive, so it goes positive, negative to positive. Then they'll dip the wax positive into like a liquid ceramic called investment over and over again over weeks of time. And once that gets to the proper thickness, they then fire that ceramic shell. And when they fire it, the wax comes out of the mold and then it's filled with the bronze. But it's not all one piece. It's multiple pieces.
Really?
The arms, the legs. Like if I were to sculpt you, I would find a natural gasket area where your shoulders would be. And as morbid as it may sound, we would remove the legs where your legs bent in the chair. So your torso and your head would be one piece. Each arm would be cast separately. Then they do a gating system in the wax, and where the bronze is going to go to different parts of the sculpture. And And then once it's all cast, they weld everything back together, and then I have to come in and make sure that that their work after welding it matches my work. So there's a lot of artists that are involved. The people at the foundry are also artists as well.
Oh,
incredible,
yes.
Artists.
Well, in the few minutes remaining, Andy, I was hoping you might tell us, particularly in light of recent events, horrific,
mm-hmm.
and good,
mm-hmm.
in terms of race relations, will these recent events be on your mind as you create Dr. King in bronze?
They've been on my mind even before that. I knew that I was selected, or was in the hunt to be chosen as the artist, when I got a call from Andy Welch, and he thought that he wanted to introduce me and make sure that my name was considered, and through the process was chosen for that honor. But it was on my mind for quite some time, because it almost feels like the world's going crazy. I mean, we're losing. We seem to be losing our humanity, and maybe this will give, except for the ignorant among us, it'll give us something else to talk about, for crying out loud. And art has that power, tremendous power to do that. It really does. You know that it can evoke tremendous emotions from us, and I hope that this would be a good thing.
Well, certainly the subject was the ultimate symbol of peace and
bringing
humanity.
People together, sure,
yes.
Absolutely.